Chapter 39. Snakes, Teeth, and Castles in the Air. Sidney Grice sprawled diagonally in his armchair, his feet on the coal scuttle. He was browsing through a thick document. Bocking v. Bocking, I read on the cover.
Scrutinize this,
he greeted me, delving in a waistcoat pocket to show me something like a small biscuit for a good dog. Is this the button you took from Lucy?
About which you have shown a singular and eldritch absence of curiosity,
he confirmed accusingly. I refused to admit that I had forgotten all about it. Can I see? My guardian spun the button high in the air, and I caught it in one hand. Cream ivory with some symbols carved on it in cameo. I squinted. It looks like a beer barrel tied in a rope. Mr. G held out his pince-nez.
Perhaps you should consider getting a pair of these.
I got up and helped myself to his silver-handled third-best magnifying glass on the desk and went to the window for the better light.
Rotate it 90 degrees anti-clockwise,
my guardian advised.
Where is that slattern? She went up 20 minutes ago.
Perhaps she did not hear the bell, I suggested.
She heard it. There was a 3-second pause in her activities.
A castle? I moved the glass out to sharpen the focus. With a snake wrapped around it.
In which era and at what location have castles been constructed with twin roots?
He let his pince-nez dangle on its pink cord.
It represents a lower molar.
He put his fingertips together.
How is your German?
As good as my Japanese. I replaced the glass, gave him back the button and sat to face him again.
Tooth translates as Zahn, and snake as Schlange.
I could not help but notice how he sat more erect when he spoke German. Schlange-Zahn, I realized, not very cleverly. Sidney Grice yanked on the bell pull again. There was a distant cry and Molly came clattering down the stairs. Surely that is proof enough that he attacked Lucy.
Is it?
Mr. G inclined his head. I suppose somebody else could have worn his waistcoat, I conceded, as Molly cantered along the hall.
This is one of 40 possible explanations, and only the 6th most likely.
Molly burst into the room.
You are late,
her employer scolded.
Better late than later,
she responded brightly, but seeing that did not go down very well, tried again with,
I'm sorry, sir, but I was just giving the cat a bath.
She struggled to straighten her apron, but managed to twist it more askew.
You were doing what?
I exclaimed in horror.
Is she all right? You have not drowned her.
I jumped out of my chair, but Molly slapped her knees in merriment.
Bless you, miss. I didn't not put no water in. I gave Spirit a bath to play in with Mr. Grice's sock, what he don't not know she chewed up last week.
I think he does now, I told Molly, and she clamped her hands over her mouth, one at a time.
Oh, miss, you didn't not tell him?
No, you just did, I sat back. And her name is Spirit. Molly's arms windmilled, nearly catching her employer in the face as he whisked away.
Oh, bless you, miss, I know that. But she laughs like a spider when I call her that.
You took Molly on, I reminded my guardian, and he rolled his eye.
So you did, bless you, sir.
Molly smiled affectionately.
That is 3 blessings in 2 minutes, he complained. Any more, and I might as well have employed the Pope.
I didn't not think you cared for roaming Catholics.
Molly folded her arms with the air of a doorman who had been instructed not to admit me.
I do not care for anyone, he reminded her.
You liked Mrs. Diligent, she reminisced, and the doctor lady.
Molly rested a hand familiarly on the back of her employer's chair, and he flinched, his mouth working towards an explosion of abuse.
And the gore-string woman what we stayed with?
It had been one of the most terrifying nights of my life, but Molly was clasping her cheeks as one might recollect a romantic dinner. Tea, please, Molly, I put in hastily, and she looked at me dolefully.
Me and Mr. Grice was having a good old chinwag,
she reproached me. catching her employer's expression as she bent to pick up the tray.
"Oh, well, now, look, you've gone and upset him, and he's so difficult to upset, Norman Lee."
She stumbled on the hearthrug.
"Not to worry, sir. We'll catch up later."
She began to curtsy, but thought better of it as the tray tipped 30 degrees.
"Bless him,"
she crooned as she left. "But we do know that the button belonged to Schlangazan," I recapitulated.
"It certainly resembles a button which Prince Ulrich Albrecht Sigismund Schlangazan might wear."
Mr. G. shook open a folded square of chamois. "So shall we pay him a visit?" I suggested.
"Not yet."
He polished his eye. "Why not?"
"There are turnips for dinner."
Sidney Grice reinserted his eye. It was not, but it looked upside down.
"And I have yet another telegram to send to that not especially mysterious, though doubtless parasitical solicitor, Mr. Silas Spry."
He went back to his reading.
"Good heavens," he cried. "I have yet to reach the thrilling climax of this account, but from Miss Bocking's testimony of how she invented her safety pencil sharpener, it would appear that the design was indeed stolen."
He waved the report accusingly.
"From me!"